Let's face it, parenting is the most important job on earth. Every day presents a stack of different challenges, and more often than not, the answer is outside of the box. On this podcast, we will offer proven strategies, interview pioneers in education, give insights into how to be successful parents, and even share our imperfect experiences of being parents ourselves. We're all in on this journey, and we will span the globe to find out what is working and who has the answers. This is the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast. Here are your hosts, Darren McCarthy and Brian Powers.
Welcome to the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast. I'm Brian Powers.
And I'm Darren McCarthy.
And Darren, today we are back talking to our friend Gail Moyers. And a little excerpt out of a webinar we did with her.
Yeah, you got to give it to Gail. She just keeps going. Technology does not get in the way, sir.
No, it does not. No, it does not. So why smart students struggle is the topic.
Yeah, this whole premise was based on an article she had written a couple years ago, and I think that's a lot. It kind of hits home for a lot of parents.
Yeah, I mean, she talks about how, you know, a lot of important things that we need to touch on right now with the current situation we're in, with where we're teaching our kids from home, and we're kind of the quote unquote educators with their teachers in virtually now.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you don't realize that you just see as a parent that they're struggling or they're getting frustrated. And a lot of times that struggle and that frustration comes out as behavior.
Yeah.
What we perceive as negative behavior. So if they're avoiding doing the work, or if they're kind of moving around in their seat a lot, or they're, you know, again, kind of procrastinating. These are signs that it's typically either the assignment is perceived as too difficult, or it's something that's going to kind of highlight an area that they're having difficulty in. So, you know, smart students do struggle, but sometimes they struggle with the language to tell you why they're struggling.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you know, different signals that you have to be aware of and what you can do to help.
And so she dives into that, and in typical Gail fashion, she covers about 15 other things and comes back home. And, you know, every time she speaks lately, I've got a pencil and paper in hand because we're going to get a lot out of that. Actually, we were able to take that video and we did a small video on behavior based out of what she was talking about. We did another one based on nutrition, and then ultimately we talked about reading and learning, and all of that came from that webinar. It was pretty good input from our audience as well. And it's fantastic. You know, I thought it was interesting that she talked about nutrition because we worked a lot lately with Radish Kids.
Yeah.
And you and I were highlighting that in our parent group, Sound Foundations for Parenting on Facebook, the parent group there. Yeah. And we were talking about our competition and, 30 days to better parenting, so to speak. And so why don't you give us a little bit of feedback, how Radish Kids been going for you?
You transitioned to the two things that I wanted to talk about very well. I appreciate that.
Hey, that's what we do.
So we have a sponsor today, Radish Kids. It's a cooking club for kids. You know, some really great people over there. It's a monthly culinary fund delivered right to your doorstep. So right now, you know, wanting to be at home and do, you know, different things with your kids at home, a lot of them are, I know mine are, inquisitive about cooking. So this is a pretty cool packet that they send you every month, recipes, different things and topics about where it's coming from, where the recipes are coming from, different parts of the world. And they send you a tool, like a kitchen tool every month as well with it. So you really get a lot out of it. We've got a special code on our website. Check it out. And you'll be able to get a discount just because you're our listeners. So check that out. Radish Kids is our sponsor for this episode. And then one last thing, we started our own group, Sound Foundations for Parenting group. The link will be in the show notes below. Check that out. We're doing a 30-day challenge within that group. You've heard us talk about big rocks, little kids. the calendar planner resources that we put together for parents right now to kind of keep their sanity and get organized with their kids at home. We're doing kind of a daily video talking about each resource that you should be working on a daily basis. And we want to get feedback from you. So that group will be perfect for you to go into and share your feedback and what's working for you, what's not, ask questions. Darren and I will be in there, and we're really hoping to build that group up so it'll be a good resource. So I think that's all the awesome business I have for today, Darren. So let's get into that episode with Gail.
Away we go with Gail Moyers.
Welcome, Gail.
Hi, it's so nice to be here. Thank you.
And Gail, maybe we'll go into a little bit of your background, and then we'll start to talk about the subject of students and why smart students struggle. So maybe just give us a little bit of a background on you and your background in education.
Well, my background is extended in time. We don't need to verify that. But I've actually taught more than 3,000 students and 3,000 teachers on teaching techniques. So I have a lot of experience, a lot of learning, and my favorite quote is, good teachers must never cease to learn, and that's been the story of my life. And I had a clinic in San Diego for almost 20 years where we taught the students that the schools had missed out on teaching. They just couldn't get past what the struggle was. And keep in mind, when we go into our topic today, why smart students struggle, just remember, every student is smart enough. I even had a successful story with a student with half a brain. And when I met him, he couldn't read, write, walk, or talk. And we had him a couple years. We worked with him 5 days a week. And he now reads, writes, walks, talks, walks all the way around the golf course. And helped a Malaysian student earn money for a heart transplant. So that's what I call success. Right. And success comes from, actually that student I didn't want to take, but there's a thing called the way our brain works. Let's start there. Everybody thinks of a two-sided brain. You have a vision side of the brain and you have a word linear side of your brain. You have a picturing side of the brain. The answer isn't really in the left-right side brain thinking. We also have a three-layered brain, which is critical. It's one of the most important things I learned. And our bottom brain, the lowest brain, is the first to develop, and it's our fight-or-flight brain. It's our survival brain. And then because we develop more than ordinary mammals, we have language and intuition and emotion, and that's the midbrain. Then we have the part of the brain they want to see at school called the neocognitive brain. I call it the thinking brain, and that's the learning brain. However, it's all hierarchical. If you don't have a sense of well-being, stress, anxiety trumps learning. And you have to go 1, 2, 3. The good news is that midbrain, I call it the cement between the bricks. And that's the language and musical brain. And I found that if we use music, it will quell the stress in the bottom and open up so that the teaching can occur at the top. In my career, the magical tool I've had is music, and I can't stress it enough.
Gail, maybe tell us a little bit about, you know, you reference a diagram or the learning tree. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Right. And that's a really good way to think about learning in general, because if you think of the tree above the soil line, let's look at the trunk. Imagine the trunk. That's going to be what we're learning. You can have a good school, a good teacher, and a good curriculum or a good textbook or a good program. And that's all about what we learn. And when students get stuck or hit a plateau there, we have to go down to the root system. And if you go below the soil line, we move from what we learn to how we learn. And then thinking of the foliage on the tree, that's our goal. is to feed the learning system from the root, get to the basic skills knowledge, and become our student or child becomes a lifelong independent learner. And that's our goal. So what happens at the how we learn? How we learn is a five-step process. And most basic skills programs, teachers and administrators and school expectations assume the first three input. We have to have input to learn. We have to get what the teacher's saying. So that's called, you have to be able to see and know what you're seeing. For instance, like in hidden pictures, you can find the focus and find the picture that's hidden in all those lines. And the more important one is the auditory. So can you even tell that you're hearing two words that are the same or different? I actually had a fourth grade teacher that couldn't tell me if equestrian and equestrian were same or different words. And this was never get his vocabulary spelled correctly on the classroom board to teach the reading lesson. So if we can hear big, beg, and we know they're different, then we have what we call correct input. The ears perceived what you said correctly. Then the next step of learning is to know how they're different, the perception. Well, you've got the perception. You know they're big and beg. They're different. And then you have to know how they're different. They're different at the beginning. Or they're the same, excuse me. They're the same at the beginning, the same at the end, but different in the middle. And that's called understanding the difference. So one, two, three. We can hear it. And do we perceive it correctly? And can we understand the comparison of the two spoken words? That's where reading and spelling break down. Then below that line, I have a little line in my chart. Below that line is what they're always working on storage and retrieval. But they don't look at, we don't look at as a professional, we don't look at the auditory input. Are they getting what's been said? Can they understand that it's same or different? Or how it's different. That's step three. So that input is how we learn, not what we learn. And usually the error is there. However, going back to that tri-level brain, we have to always consider that there's no stress or anxiety. And Dr. Larry Silver told us you can't rule in labels like ADHD and ADD and dyslexia and, you know, all those labels they send out until you've ruled out depression, stress, and he always has three of those. So you can't rule in ADHD until you've ruled out depression, stress, and the third one was learning disabilities. Dr. Larry Silver wrote the book The Misunderstood Child, and last time I looked at the book, his diagnosis of this was on page 52, actually. My children say I need a life because I can remember those page numbers. So it's about how we learn, and the other two things to consider, you have a smart enough child, you have a good enough school, good enough teacher, and it's not working. And one of the more important things today that wasn't so necessary long ago is nutrition, because we live in a time when the students have more choice and more availability about things that get in the way of learning. The top one is sugar. So if they're drinking sodas, when they go to school, they have cereal with milk on it, which also has added sugar and sometimes sugar on it. And they eat the cereal and leave the milk in the bowl, which is the one source of protein. So what happens is you have these sugar drops in your brain, and your pancreas just goes berserk. But when you hit the sugar drop about 10:30 in the morning, you can't focus. So you will appear to have ADHD. And I've actually had a change in that within 3 days by adding specific 17 grams of protein to the 15-year-old's lunch. I mean, excuse me, breakfast. And she even told me, I met her on the third day, and she said, I can pay attention in school now. And this was a student that was being prescribed Ritalin for attention, and Ritalin wasn't the answer. Protein was the answer in that case. The second thing that I want parents to think about is behavior. You've heard the phrase, the tail wagging the dog. Well, that's very common today because parents want to get along with their students. They want to make it as easy as they can for both the student and them. And if you get into the thing where you're bribing a child to do work for you, any kind of work, if they have a job every day to make their bed and take out the trash once a week, they could and should be doing that without prompts and without whining and without begging. And there are ways to change behavior which are very easy, but we don't have to get into that. But a child won't learn well if he's in charge. If it's the tail wagging the dog, children are they become very anxious, just like a dog would. When the dog is trained, that's what I call discipline. I don't call punishment discipline. Training is discipline. And so you're going to teach your child who's in charge. And once you're in charge in a loving, supportive way, you won't have that anxiety, which is that bottom layer of the brain that trumps learning. Believe it or not, I wish I'd known this when my kids were little. Behavior is very easy. And it truly is. But that's another topic for another day.
Let's talk a little bit about, what has to happen to take, what has to happen for learning to take place.
Okay, you got to have a relaxed, comfortable child. You have to have good nutrition. And the best thing you can do for your child is take the sugar away. Just make sure you're not eating any more than 10 grams. Start reading labels. And then you have to have a good diagnosis. And I'm going to use this as an example. I had a student named Tina that was 8 years old, and they all decided that she was, quote, dyslexic because she saw letters backwards and scrambled. Now, how did they know that? Interesting. So they asked me to pull her out for a reading assessment in our pull-out reading program for students that were getting behind in class. So I had Tina in my office about 40 minutes, and we did a reading test, and she would do things like look at uncle and say lunch. And that's why the family and the teacher said, see, she's dyslexic. She scrambles the letters. So I said to Tina, after we finished the word reading test, I said, Tina, let's go back to the beginning and read all the words that we read already. And you look at the word and start at the front and tell me the letters in each word. So we did 78 words. Tina never scrambled the order, never left out a letter, never added in a letter, and never even missed B's or D's, which surprised me. And at the end, I said to Tina, I said, well, what do you think makes spelling and reading hard for you? Best answer I ever heard in my life. She said, oh, I know what it is. My ears trick me. I can't tell if what I say matches what I see. That is a dyslexic child. It's not a vision problem. She got all the letters. It's an auditory problem. I can't tell if what I see is what I say. So when she looks at uncle and says lunch, she doesn't hear the CH at the end, right? She doesn't hear the L at the beginning that isn't in the word she's looking at. And so the issue is, and this is how my program, Learning Ears, got started. The issue is there a way we can train that ear so that between what we see and what we hear can be discerned? It's called self-monitoring, a spoken response. And remember, reading is all about taking the print from the page toward the ear and being able to say to yourself, yeah, that works, that matches. And students that are below potential in reading, even though they're smarter than what they're reading, will have, I'll bet 99% of the time, this auditory input issue. And we found out in the 60s, we thought the brain was formed and it was done. Now we know the brain is still plastic all through the rest of our lives. I've done ear training on 76-year-olds that had magnificent changes. So I developed learning ears because it retrains the auditory input of the brain, and because we do ear voice training with what we see, they get that ear voice loop, which is very, very important for reading and spelling. And it's a great program. Great program. And I've said it works about 90% of the time. And when it doesn't work, it's because the parents don't follow the 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Isn't that the truth with really any programs that you do? Exercise or learning, you got to follow it to make it work.
Right. And you have to be on the right program.
Yes.
You know, you have to be on the right exercise program so you can build in a sequence.
Yep.
Learning always is sequential. We don't realize that. But we learn this, and then we can add on that, and then we can add on that. Math is a really good example of that sequential learning. Reading is the same way.
You make an analogy in an article you wrote that we'll share with the folks that are on the webinar about how learning is seen as a job and that the learner needs a toolbox. Maybe talk a little bit as we kind of wrap up as what they need to in that toolbox to take to their job of learning.
And the most important thing they need in their toolbox is the ability that Tina was talking about. Can I tell if I said what I see? The auditory input. You see, blind people function really well without the without the auditory teaching. They can get along in the world. They can use a cane for curbs and, you know, listening to signals at the corner and all that. But auditory kids have a terrible time learning because they aren't able to monitor themselves when they're doing reading and spelling. So that's what we mean about toolbox. You have to have good nutrition. You have to be well-disciplined. You have to be settled and not afraid in your life. So you have to be emotionally settled. The other part of the toolbox, a big part, is speech and language development. And most students, remember when the baby's in utero, the auditory system is functional at 16 to 18 weeks. It's functional and working. Now, it's not working through your ears. It's working through your bones and your tissues. The vibrations work the system as the fetus is in uterus. When it's born, it's going to transfer into ear input language. It takes from birth to about 12 years old to move as far as it needs to go. And that can be all measured on a hearing test, actually. But hearing, it's not the problem. It can be. But once you can hear, you also need to be able to listen and do those first three steps for input, where you can tell if you heard two words the same or different, that type of thing. And that can all be trained now. And I use a combination of music and voice in learning ears, which is 20 weeks long and very, very successful. We've done more than 3,000 students through the program and change their lives.
And, you know, for folks, and we'll definitely include the website and to find out more, it's learningears.com. And you've just written a book that people can download for free on that website.
Right. Yeah, it's tune up your brain, because that's what you're doing. It's kind of, I love it because it has the music tune up. We use the music to tune up the brain so it can take fine differences. And it's called Tune Up Your Brain, Learning Ears, Improving Results at Work and School. So if you're a person that thinks you're just not clicking at work, Learning Ears is a good program for adults too.
Yeah. And I know you tell a lot of stories from your career in that book. And like I said to you before, who doesn't love a good story?
Right.
gives us good examples that, you know, parents can relate with. And then kind of the next step we would suggest is to go and take that survey, that the free survey that we have on learningears.com, correct?
Right. And then If you finish the survey, that gives us enough information so that you can ask for a consultation call. We can call you if you have more questions.
Sure.
Have to do that.
Talk a little bit more specifics about, you know, individual cases and students and their you know, parents and their children. So, I think the most important step is to really is like you said to take action. And for folks to check out learningyears.com. Some of the people on this call have already downloaded your book. That's how we told them about this webinar. But then also to download that, but then also to sign up for the consultation, through that survey. And then you can reach out to them and work a little more one-on-one with them.
Right. And remember, the student is doing exactly what it should be doing. What the student is doing. Bad behavior is good news. That's the way I've taught all my life. I had a wonderful person that taught me that. Bad behavior is good news because if we listen, the students will tell us where they are and how they're struggling. So if the behavior is coming out, they don't want to do it anymore. They don't want to try. It's called shutdown. Because if you're K-3, you really believe, research has documented this, that if I work hard, I'll be smart. And so they work really, really hard, and they're still not smart. So after that, fourth grade and up usually, the person says, well, if I don't care, that's better than being dumb. And so if you've got a student that's plateauing and kind of has an attitude problem, you can overcome that. Just get a consultation and we can, you know, almost everything I know everything I've had in the book is a true story. And there are many, many cases between the lines there too. Because my students, my teachers, that's kind of been my way of teaching. I didn't teach them, they taught me. And we found our way together.
Very true. We didn't cover too much in the webinar about anxiety and somehow, you know, how that can present itself differently, you know, especially with maybe misdiagnosis and things like that. We touched on it a little bit in the beginning, but maybe you could dive a little bit deeper into that because we have a few extra minutes.
Anxiety is so common. Think about yourself. If you had to go to work every day without all the tools you needed, how would you be? You'd be anxious. You know, if I wanted you to sew in 25 zippers and you didn't have a clue how to do that job, you'd be anxious. Mm-hmm. And anxiety, just remember, anxiety trumps learning. And the other thing is that produces anxiety is if we are anxious about our child, and I always say, I had a student, one of my own children, that was very compromised auditorily. I didn't even discover it, but he had a 25% hearing loss when he was ready to go into kindergarten. And because he had two older siblings that did all of his talking, we didn't even notice that he couldn't talk. But he didn't learn to read until third grade. And talk about anxiety. He loved his teachers and his mommy loved him. And I just figured he was smart enough. But I was in the process of many other issues I was trying to solve. And I just looked at Brian and I said, well, I can't have one more problem. So I just said to him, I said, don't worry, sweetie. It'll get easier and easier. Just hang in there. And that's all I ever said to him. I think by sixth grade, that was third grade, he was 2.5 years above grade level. So you can catch up once you get those foundational skills, which we got, by using another system instead of his ears in his teaching process. He's actually done learning ears now. And he's brilliant. He's doing better than the two older siblings that didn't have learning challenges. But if you worry that he's not going to be able to learn or he's not going to be able to get to college or he's not going to be able to get on the team, you're worrying. He sees. They don't listen, but they look. And they see your veins go out in your neck. And when you worry, they trust you. So if you're worried, they should be worried. And then they can't learn. So that's another thing is just imagine that we're going to work it out. There's a way to work it out. I've never had a student that couldn't learn except a 41-year-old that was still on drugs.
And those those are other problems to deal with. Great. Well, Gail, we have a few folks here. We can open it up. You know, if they want to submit a question in the chat portion, while we're waiting to see if anybody wants to do that, we can, you know, again, learningears.com is your website, and there they can get the free book that you've written, and also complete that survey that kind of is that next step after after taking a look at your book and going from there.
Right.
Okay, great. Well, Gail, thank you very much. We appreciate the time. This will be the first of many webinars that we'll offer. We appreciate your time, Gail Moyers, Moyers Learning Systems and learningyears.com. Yes.
Two fast things. Remember, every student is smart enough, and if they could just learn to say, my best is good enough. And number three, as parents and or teachers, we need to assume the child is doing his best, and we need to find out why he's limited to that level. My best is good enough, and every child is smart enough.
Three great things to take away, if nothing else, from this webinar.
Right.
Well, Gail, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you again soon.
My pleasure. Have a good day, everybody.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast with your hosts, Darren and Brian. Find them on social media at Sound Foundations for Parenting. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and subscribe. And we'll catch you next time on the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast.